Welcome to another edition of Between the Rows, the podcast of Glacier Farm Media. I'm your host for this episode, Gord Gilmore. This week, we'll be talking to the Manitoba Co-operator's Alan Dawson about a major review of the rules surrounding the Canadian grain trade.
The federal government has said that it, you know, thinks it's time to take a look at the Act and make sure that it's meeting the needs of the industry.
And Farmtario editor John Gregg joins us to discuss automation and the farm.
I think we're getting much closer to science fact with a lot of these technologies.
But first, here's a word from our sponsor.
Get a jump on the season without interest slowing you down. Join FBN now through August 10th and apply for 0% financing on purchases made during your first 30 days and pay no interest until 2022. To learn more about how you can sign up and lock in your 0% rate, go to FBN.com. Financing provided by Farm Credit Canada. By applying for credit through FCC, you consent to FBN providing your information to FCC or its designated third-party service providers. Not all applicants will qualify. Only available to new transacting FBN members in Canada, excluding Quebec.
Welcome back. Would you sit down to watch 20 minutes of corn silage harvesting? Or how about no less than 41 videos on the Massey Ferguson 3070? Or are you looking for a playlist simply called Dirt Field? Well, if you answered yes to any of those viewing choices, you might be one of the 14,000 people who subscribe to MacFarm's YouTube channel. MacFarm's is up next as part of our series on Canada's top ag influencers. BTR contributor Bruce Thorson caught up with Scott McIntosh, the man behind the MacFarm's channel, at his farm on the shores of Cape Breton, Nova Scotia.
Morning, guys. Welcome to MacFarm's. If you're new here, please consider subscribing. And also, hit that thumbs up button. It really helps out promoting the videos. So, on today's agenda, we gotta bale some hay, I think. Hopefully it's dry enough, we'll have to find out later on. But first things first, we gotta put the mower, or the baler, I should say, on the tractor that the mower was on. And grease it up, I guess.
My name is Scott McIntosh. We have a 50-cow dairy farm here in Cape Breton, Nova Scotia. And I have a YouTube channel called Mac Farms.
Let's talk, before we get into the YouTube channel too much, why don't we just learn a bit more about your farm? Is this a family farm? How long have you guys been farming? What more can you tell us about that?
So I farm with my father and my uncle. It goes back about four generations. My great-grandfather took over the farm way back, and it's kind of been in the family ever since.
Actually, could you tell us just a bit more about that island and your farm? And because it is unique. I talk to farmers mostly on the prairies, so I was happy to speak to somebody in Cape Breton.
For sure. So Cape Breton is on the eastern end of Nova Scotia. It's kind of a medium-sized island. It takes about 2.5 hours or so to drive from where we're at to the causeway that connects us to the mainland. So we're surrounded by the Atlantic Ocean here. And
I think we think more fishing when we think of Nova Scotia than dairy farming.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, my uncle fishes too. He farms here, and he fishes lobster as well. So there's a fishing wharf just up the road.
And is there anything that you're aware of that's, apart from the scenery, is there anything unique to farming in that sort of setting?
So out west, I mean, the fields are so much bigger, and it's just a lot of flat land too in places. I mean, there's hills in Alberta and Saskatchewan too, obviously, but I mean, just where the farms are, it seems like it's just, such vast expanses of land, and all the equipment is way bigger too. I mean, everybody's using articulated tractors and that out there. Whereas here, the fields are a lot smaller. Like a big field here for us is like, 7 or 8 acres. And the equipment is just so much smaller too. The biggest tractor we own is, 100 horsepower or so, which is I don't even know what they use them for out there. Yard tractors, I guess, are moving gear around. So it's just a totally different scale. And, you know, the crops are a little bit different too. Grain isn't as big of a thing here as it is out there.
Hey guys, Maritime Farmer had a video showing some of his rock collection, I guess you'd call it. So I thought I would show some of ours. This is in a section we call the rough pasture. This was cleared quite a few years ago, probably in the 80s. We don't actually farm this section anymore. Used to have dry cows and heifers. So this is kind of on the road going towards the turnip patch field, we call it.
You've been doing this since 2006, which is pretty close to the start of YouTube, actually. How did that happen? How did this start? because you know, I've talked to some other folks and they've just started in the last couple of years and they say, oh, I was watching this and I was watching that and I thought I could do this. But I was thinking, man, if it was 2006, you weren't going to be seeing much else.
No, back in 2006, well, I started off the channel, I was making more like ATV videos and that kind of stuff, because that's kind of what I was interested in at the time. And, you know, farming channels on YouTube really weren't a thing then, but ATV videos were. So I was making ATV videos first. And it, so for quite a while, it was just ATV videos. And then as time went on, I guess maybe around 2010, 2011, then I started doing more of the farming kind of videos when other farm channels started to pop up, and I kind of got the idea in my head to do that. So, and then I guess 2016 or so, I moved home from Alberta and I started doing YouTube pretty well, you know, constantly then on the farm full time. So that's kind of how that played out. Hey guys, welcome back to Mac Farms. Here today working on the 1394. I got the cab off it down here in the other shop. I figured I'd do a little bit of an update video. I've been doing a little bit of work kind of off camera and that, so I just wanted to kind of update you guys, I guess. I did a lot to the cab since we took it off.
And what have you learned about your own channel in terms of what's popular and what isn't in your production? I mean, after all this time, you must have some insight into what works for you and what doesn't.
You know, after all this time, it's hard to say. Some videos just do better than others, and there's no real rhyme or reason. I've had videos that I've spent days editing. I thought I did, you know, this phenomenal job on them, and they're going to do great, and they just tank. And then I'll do another video where I'll film it with my cell phone and do minimal editing and upload it, and it does, you know, 200,000 views. So, you know, after all this time, I can't really say I've figured out any rhyme or reason towards YouTube. It just kind of, it does what it does.
Yeah, about 6 acres or so. This field is a little better than half done, and we've reached a point now where the little silo, I'll say little, it's the 50 footer, we get the 50 and the 60, so the little silo is just about full. So we're running out of room.
In the media industry, whether it's print or it's broadcast, there's a lot of people watching what's going on YouTube and independent content producers like yourself, and there, you know, people are wondering, is the viewing public moving away from traditional ways of learning about farms and farming? So the magazines, the newspapers, even the websites, and are they migrating towards these YouTube channels? Do you have a take on that?
I think YouTube is getting, you know, pretty popular for that. I mean, there's a lot to be learned on YouTube. There's videos on everything you can imagine, even not with just farming, but any subject, you know, it's so easy to just do a YouTube search and watch a 10-minute video on it. You know, it's nice that way. I think it's definitely moving in that direction.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Scott. I really appreciate you taking the time to do this.
Well, guys, we actually got the silo full. There is still a few loads left out in the field, though, so we'll have to leave it settle, I guess. Try to tomorrow get a couple loads in and see where we're at then. But, of course, that'll be in the next video. So thanks for watching, guys, and we'll see you next time.
That was another installment in our limited series on ag influencers in Canada. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm this week's host, Gord Gilmore. Later in the show, we'll have Alan Dawson taking us through the ongoing review of Canada's grain industry. But first, here's John Gregg, Farmtario editor. He recently took in a summit on agriculture and automation.
John, thanks for joining us today.
No problem, Gord.
So you attended a recent virtual ag robotics and automation event. What sort of interest there was on display?
It was an event organized by the RH Accelerator, which is a organization based in London, Ontario, which invests in early stage ag companies, among some other things that it invests in as far as startup companies. And it brought together especially Canadian companies who are doing who are working in this area, in the area of farm automation, everything from precision spraying, autonomous planting and weeding, a company that started up a robotic dealership for agriculture in Ontario, and then other ag tech companies and leaders.
So when I looked at your story initially, I was really struck that it was almost like science fiction. But I guess the real question, science fiction, science fact, in fact, or somewhere in between the two?
I think we're getting much closer to science fact with a lot of these technologies. We've been hearing about these sorts of things for several years now, and there's a pile of venture capital going into these sorts of companies around the world, and they're really being driven by challenges finding employees, and that's where some of these things are going to be first adopted. The Canadian Agriculture Human Resources Council in the last week released a study that showed there were real losses during the pandemic due to a lack of employees for farms, and that's a threat to the food system, really. So I think they're being driven by necessity, and that the technology is getting closer. The real question will be economics and actual practicality, and I think that's really the big question that'll be answered next.
Which brings actually us to my next question, which is, where are we likely to see this technology applied first? Where is that business case likely to exist to apply it?
In higher value crops, I think, is where we'll see them used first. So a higher value crop requires higher inputs on a smaller land base. So you have more efficient ways of running an autonomous unit in a small area that's more controlled, where it doesn't have to go very far before it does its next task. So I think that's probably why it could be an area like vineyards. There's already some interesting things happening in vineyards in Ontario and around the world as far as crop monitoring and spraying and that sort of thing there. Fields, crops like horticulture crops, especially say lettuce field crops, for example, or it could be carrot field crops, where you can run one of these small units that might do planting if you're planting with seeds, or weeding or crop monitoring, where you just set it and it runs up and down the rows and does its job. And most of the products that were shown at the event were certainly finding their first usage in vineyards and horticulture crops.
Was there any discussion as to whether or not we'll see a day where it's going to be feasible for the broadacre crops, your corn, soybeans, canola, wheat, that sort of thing? I know the economics are much different, but was there any interest in that at all?
In the forum we were I was on, there wasn't a whole lot of discussion with that. Although there's certainly there's a Canadian company that is working on precision spraying. You fly over the field with a drone, it identifies very accurately what needs to be sprayed. Then you load that map into a sprayer, which will then spot spray the weeds. So certainly that's where some of it will come. So that there are all the broadacre crop equipment companies are very much looking at automation as well. And where it, I think it'll come in broad acres is gradually and what's happening is they're finding out things as they're testing these further off concepts, and they're moving some of that into the, into the John Deere's and Case's and AGCO machinery of the world already. But where it will find, earlier on, like there are, Raven, for example, has bought the DOT technology that was developed in Canada. It's kind of moving slowly. They also have a automated system that allows you to run your grain buggy without anybody in the tractor cab, where it talks to the combine, the combine driver calls for the grain buggy, it comes automatically and you can unload it. So I think that's where that's where it'll show up in the broadacre row crops is in places where there's probably a human somewhere around, but it can eliminate one other of the humans in the process.
And now, did you leave this event with any sense at all of the timelines before this becomes something that we're going to be seeing regularly in the field?
Regularly, I'm not sure. I think that will take we're probably looking at 10 years at least for some of this for it to be regularly. But I think in certain areas, it's going to come quickly. The labor shocks from the pandemic have been significant and very costly, and I think the managing our foreign worker reliance, just even this spring too, is a massive expensive challenge, and so I think some people are going to take some flyers on some of this technology, and it's when it gets in the field that it's going to happen. Certainly, some of it I know is happening in California, where the real global focus on in-field horticulture crops is happening. Where we grow most of that stuff, and there's certainly a lot of it is being tested there now. So regularly might be a while, but in some uses, I don't think it will be. I don't think it will be long.
And just one final question. Was there any discussion at all about the kind of stumbling blocks that need to be cleared away before this technology can succeed?
Yeah, there are two or three. First is economics. And this is when I've talked to tech startups and people like that, I emphasize to them that farmers have to see an economic value or it's just not going to work. That's the first bottom line. And some of these technologies will not make it, and they might not make it just by a hair if they cannot get over that economic value bit. Some of them will figure it out and it will make sense. The other one is rural cell and internet connectivity. I think that's critical to being able to run these. And I mean, there's solutions people are working on all over the place, and they're coming, but they're not there yet. So that's the other big stumbling block is that connectivity part.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to run us through this, John.
No problem, Gard.
That was FarmTerio editor John Gregg telling us about the robot revolution coming to a farm near you. You're listening to Between the Rows, the podcast of Glacier Farm Media. I'm your host, Gord Gilmore. We're joined now by Alan Dawson, who spent much of his career following Canada's grain trade. He says there's an ongoing review of the Grain Act and the role of the Grain Commission that could have a profound and long-lasting effect. Alan, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks.
So can you tell us a little bit about the Grain Act, the Grain Commission, and their role in the grain trade in Canada?
Well, the Canada Grain Act was enacted in 1912, but its origins come from legislation that goes further back, right back to 1900. It was the Manitoba Grain Act, and that act, and then the Canada Grain Act, as we have now, that came into being in 1912, was meant to address farmer discontent in Western Canada. There'd been a lot of years of farmers complaining about how of ill treatment, alleged ill treatment from grain handlers, grain companies, elevator companies on the prairies. There were a number of royal commissions and inquiries that looked into these complaints and found that in some cases there were, you know, the farmers' concerns were justified. And the Canada Grain Act, which the Grain Commission administers, boils down to a couple of main themes, one being assuring the quality of Canadian grain and protecting grain farmers. And while it's legislation that applies across Canada in many respects, it does vary a little bit from east to west, and the emphasis, I think, is, it's fair to say, is on Western grain production. And just, I suppose, the thing that I should point out too is that this legislation does, as I mentioned, focus on protecting farmers, and the Act has this in it. It says, subject to this Act and any directions to the Commission, that being the Grain Commission, issued from time to time under this Act by the Governing Council or the Minister of Agriculture, the Commission shall, in the interest of the grain producers, establish and maintain standards of quality for Canadian grain and regulate grain handling in Canada to ensure a dependable commodity for domestic and export markets.
Then why is there being this review undertaken of both the Act and the Grain Commission today?
Well, the grain industry has really changed a lot. Of course, it's not to say that the Act hasn't changed since 1912. It has changed many times. There have been amendments over the years. But there hasn't been a revision to the Act in a few years, and maybe not a major revision for quite a few years. In 2012, the Canadian Wheat Board single desk ended. You've got today fewer bigger elevators. Grain company consolidations occurred. So all these things have happened, and the federal government has said that it, you know, thinks it's time to take a look at the Act and make sure that it's meeting the needs of the industry. This didn't sort of happen in a vacuum. Actually, in 2014, the Harper government was working on amending the Act, and an election got in the way, and the legislation died on the order paper, as it were. And in 2019, the current government kind of rekindled things and started the process over. But in 2020, the pandemic came along and the government kind of shelved things for a while. And then they got going on it again in January and put out a discussion paper and asked, grain farmers and industry people in the grain industry to make submissions on the Act and on the role of the Grain Commission.
So, and then what are the key areas there then that appear to be under review and where attention is being focused?
Well, there's four or five main issues. I think the most contentious and the one that has the most attention being paid to it is what's referred to as outward inspection. And that sort of falls under the label of official inspection and weighing. All Western Canadian grain is exported from grain export terminals. It's mandatory for the Grain Commission to do outward inspection. So the grading of that product going out and the weighing of it, and they issue a thing called a certificate final, which is essentially Canada's stamp of approval, guaranteeing the customers getting what they ordered. And the Western Grain Elevator Association, which represents the big grain companies in Canada, would like to see that revised. It wants to be able to use third-party inspectors instead of that are hired from private companies instead of the Grain Commission doing it. Although the Elevator Association wants the Grain Commission to remain a certifying body to oversee these private companies, federal government wants input, feedback on, you know, whether the mandate of the Grain Commission should change. Now, as I mentioned earlier, it's focused on the interests of farmers. Another important one that farmers, kind of watch closely too is whether the binding arbitration that the Grain Commission engages in now should be extended. And people will probably know that as subject to inspector's grade and inspection. So if a farmer has disagrees with an elevator agent, a manager grade, and feels like it's not fair or not accurate, the farmer can ask for the Grain Commission to do the official grading, and what the Grain Commission determines will be the official grade. And also there's some discussion around, now it only applies to, you know, the official grade and dockage. And there's some discussion around whether the Grain Commission should arbitrate on things, disputes over things like falling number and dawn levels, which are not officially part of the grade. Producer protection is another big issue. Most farmers will be familiar with the protection under the Grain Act that, you know, if you deliver grain and aren't paid by an elevator within a certain period of time, and you have the proper receipts and so on, if you don't get paid, there should be compensation coming through the Grain Commission.
So there's a lot of moving parts here, it looks like, and it looks like there's a lot of people, so to speak, fighting their own corner. Do you think this has the potential to turn into a fairly divisive thing, a fairly controversial thing? What's your gut sense on that?
Well, you know, especially in grain, the grain industry, there are a lot of wedge issues. This outward inspection thing is, I think, you know, has the potential, is perhaps even arguably already a bit contentious, a bit divisive.
So the formal deadline for feedback on this proposal passed on April 30th, but that's not to say that it's wrapped up. That was simply the deadline for submissions. What are the next steps then in this review, and when can farmers expect to see any conclusions and possible changes?
Agriculture Canada is going to review all these submissions and summarize them, and then publish a document on what it heard. The Ag Canada hasn't said, you know, set a timeline for when that's going to get completed, and hasn't, you know, really outlined a timeline for implementing changes. And presumably there will be some, and probably that will entail amendments to the Grain Act. And of course that requires legislation. It'll be interesting to see if this is all completed before an election occurs.
That's always a question under our system. Okay, well, thanks, Alan. I appreciate you running us through that.
Thanks a lot.
That was Alan Dawson of the Manitoba Cooperator, telling us about a major review of Canada's grain system. That's another edition of Between the Rows, the podcast of Glacier Farm Media. I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore, saying so long and stay safe out there during the busy spring season.
Get a jump on the season without interest slowing you down. Join FBN now through August 10th and apply for 0% financing on purchases made during your first 30 days and pay no interest until 2022. To learn more about how you can sign up and lock in your 0% rate, go to FBN.com. Financing provided by Farm Credit Canada. By applying for credit through FCC, you consent to FBN providing your information to FCC or its designated third-party service providers. Not all applicants will qualify. Only available to new transacting FBN members in Canada, excluding Quebec.